Should we all denounce all of our property and materialism, giving everything to charity? It almost seems like that's exactly what the Master is saying in Luke 14:33. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. This is almost identical to what he tells the rich man in Luke 18:22. One thing you still lack: sell all that you have and distribute it to the poor, and you will have treasures in heaven, and come, follow me. Selling everything is an impossible task for most of us, nor is it asked of us. The disciples in the days of the Master were in a unique situation because Yeshua was present with them. When he called them to follow him as disciples, it was a literal call to get up and literally follow him, taking on a full-time career as a student. Unfortunately, we aren't in that position of having him present. Likewise, those families that sold their possessions and moved in together to live communally in Jerusalem after the resurrection did so because of the presence of the temple, the place they worshiped daily, and the apostles. That was not the norm for believers in the rest of the world, out in the diaspora or in Paul's communities. Poverty, for the sake of poverty, is not a virtue. We need something to survive on, and many of us have families to feed. Even the apostles knew this. After all, Peter returned to his fishing boats after the death of Yeshua, and Paul had a tent-making business. Obviously, they did not rid themselves of all of their possessions. I think there's a better way to look at these teachings. The Master was trying to get his disciples to release their grip on material things. Not everyone would be called to give up everything, but we should be able to if we are asked to do so. In reality, I think the financial call of discipleship is that we are summoned to share of the bounties that God has given us and not hold so tightly onto our surplus. It seems that this, then, is the situation going on in Acts 2, verses 44 through 45. And all who believed were together and had all things in common, and they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all, as any had need. Rather than being some kind of communal blueprint for a communist society, the idea here is that when there was a need, people would give off their surplus to help with the cause. This is further solidified in Acts chapter 4, verses 34 to 35. There was not a needy person among them, for as many as were owners of land or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of what was sold and laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as they had need. The NIV translates this as from time to time, which is the correct sense of the imperfect verb. In other words, when the need arose, people would sell what they could, but it was not a one-time selling of all possessions. The spirit of Acts is echoed in what the Mishnah describes as the attitude of the pious person. In Tractate of Vote, four types of people are discussed. There are four types of people. He who says, "Mine is mine and yours is yours." This is the average type. And some say this typifies Sodom. He who says, "Mine is yours and yours is mine," is an uneducated person. He who says, "Mine is yours and yours is yours," is a pious man. And he who says, "Mine is mine and yours is mine," is a wicked man. We should not seek to gain from others, but we should seek to help out others who are in need. Deuteronomy 15:4 stresses that the blessings of the land are in order to benefit everyone. But there will be no poor among you, for the Lord will bless you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance to possess. Surely this was not meant to enable those who are lazy, and we see Paul warning against this attitude in the book of Thessalonians. If one does not work, he should not eat. But it does cause us to realize that there are those who need our help, and we should extend our hand to them in the same way that God has extended his hand to us. The Master tells us that when we hold a banquet, we should invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. In times of celebration, we should share the bounty that God has given us with those who lack. Let's turn to another of Yeshua's sayings in Luke 16, verses 9 through 13, about righteous and unrighteous wealth. And I tell you, Make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? What is unrighteous wealth? It's not income gained through unrighteous means, but rather it's the treasures of earth, whereas the true riches of this saying are the treasures in heaven. Yeshua is saying that if we cannot be faithful with the mundane and material things that he gives us here on earth, how can we be trusted with the true riches of the kingdom? Being rich is not a sin. Some people get that impression from the story of the rich man and the beggar Lazarus. But remember, Lazarus, the poor man, goes to Abraham's bosom. And Abraham, as we read in the Torah, was a very wealthy man. Nicodemus was also wealthy and yet a faithful disciple of Yeshua. Instead, it is all about good stewardship. In fact, good stewardship can be seen as one of the true signs of repentance. For example, consider the story of Zacchaeus in Luke chapter 19, verses 8 through 9. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Yeshua said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham." Zacchaeus shows his repentance through action. He attempts to make right the wrong he has done by using his money properly rather than improperly as he had done in the past. Notice that he does not sell everything, but only half. This idea of good stewardship is paralleled in the teachings of John the Baptist in Luke chapter 3, verses 10 through 11. And the crowds asked him, "What then shall we do?" And he answered them, "Whoever has two tunics is to share with him who has none, and whoever has food is to do likewise." Everyone was to apply this teaching differently based upon their own real-life situation, but the principle was the same. We must give freely from the surplus God has provided us with. As the Master tells us, it is more blessed to give than receive. This is exactly what Paul's point is when he teaches the Corinthians about manna-style giving. In 2 Corinthians 8, verses 12 to 15, Paul uses the manna story as a springboard for a community of giving. "For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable and according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. As it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack." Paul sums it up succinctly. He is calling us to live simply. In reality, if our giving doesn't hurt a little, we are not giving enough. I'm reminded of the story of when the Master saw the widow giving the mite in Luke 21. The woman in the story did not give a piece of what she had. She gave all that she had. While giving for us might mean we don't get that cup of Starbucks or the new book we have been wanting, for her, it meant she might not eat for days. I think sometimes all of us, including myself, think that we have it a lot harder up than we really do. C.S. Lewis writes, "Nobody who gets enough food and clothing in a world where most are hungry and cold has any business to talk about misery." He continues this theme, writing, "I do not believe one can settle on how much we ought to give. I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure on comforts, luxuries, and amusements, etc., is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, we are probably giving away too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they are too small. There ought to be things we should like to do and cannot do because our charitable expenditures excludes them." Lewis's words have a real sting of truth to them. Do we give until it hurts, or do we give until it might interfere with our daily priorities? These are questions to ask ourselves every day.